You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, do you have a phobia about math? Our next guest tells us how to make math approachable and fun for everyone. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Wisconsin Public Radio Technical Director here, Michelle Good, in the studio with me. You hear her on Chapter a Day, many a day. And I'm Rob Ferret. I already said that, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
But the important thing is we're both here to ask for your support because your gift makes a huge difference. Listeners are the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 16 of you, and six of you are brand new members.
Yay.
Welcome to the six, and thank you to everybody who gave. Now, this goal, we've got a new goal this hour. We are looking for 15 people to make a donation to WPR. And these goals are set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs that you rely on.
We can meet this goal. It happens one gift at a time, and you can get us started right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What does public radio mean? Well, public radio means listener-supported radio.
We do appreciate business contributions, federal and state tax dollars, but listener support is the largest and most fun source of funding for Wisconsin public radio programs. Your gift of any amount really matters at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We should actually call it a fun drive.
Fundraising.
A fun.
I have fun.
It is. Well,
arguably too much fun.
Especially because we are giving away a chance to get those free Hamilton tickets.
That is fun. Yeah. When you give, or if you're already giving, or if you're a sustainer, you're automatically entered into a drawing for a pair of tickets to see Hamilton in Chicago. There's an overnight stay involved, some form of dinner. And I don't think it's just like a stop at a hot dog stand.
Although I love, me too.
I'd be all for that. You can get entered into it by making a gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Everything that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio is the result of thoughtful preparation. We do our homework so that you get the highest quality radio programs. So show your commitment to this quality. Commit now when you make your gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about all the stuff that's important to you. The family, friends, hobbies. These are things you invest in, your time, sometimes your money. Giving to things that are important to you makes a difference in your life, and it makes you feel good.
The biggest source of funding for WPR is listener support. So your gift makes a difference in your life and in the lives of hundreds of thousands of other listeners. Together, we make an impact on our community. So make your difference today with your first ever gift of $10 a month or $120. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give $10 a month or more and ask for a special added gift, the new 2019 WPR tote bag. It can be yours. You can show your support and carry stuff in it at the same time. Give, find out how. You can go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We would love for 15 people to make a donation. Be great if you could do that. $10 a month for this great tote bag. The nice thing about it, it's not just a handle tote bag. Like, you can actually sling it over your shoulder.
Which that's
is
key.
Really, when you want to,
as I was saying the other day, when you want to reach into your pocket and get your key while you're carrying all the groceries.
Exactly. Or if you're at the farmer's market and you got to wiggle around in your wallet to get money out, you don't have to worry about dropping everything all over the place.
Right.
It's a nice bag. $10 a month, $120 for your donation at 888-202-2552 or go online, WPR.org.
Frederick in Mequonago has given. Frederick says, vigorous in-depth reporting on difficult issues and heartwarming stories as well. These are just some of the reasons I love Central Time. Thank you, Rob and team. Frederick, thank you so much. It's very nice. And thank you so much for supporting Central Time with your gift. How about you give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.
And don't forget, as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, your donation enters you in a drawing for tickets to Hamilton in Chicago. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org, and thanks.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's a classic situation in the math class. The teacher introduces a new concept, the fractions, limits, square roots, whatever. The student groans and says, but when are we going to use this in real life? Well, our next guest, a mathematician, has made it her life's work to answer that classic question. And she's doing it in all sorts of ways, using music, baking, and interpersonal interaction. Eugenia Cheng is a scientist in residence at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. She's going to be on UW's campus in Madison this week, giving a number of talks, including a free public presentation on her book, The Art of Logic, Using It to Find Clarity for Life's Problems. That's Thursday evening in the DeLuca Forum of the Discovery Building. Eugenia, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you've encountered, I'm sure, lots of people who say they have a math phobia or a fear of math, or they're just not numbers people. What do you say to them to try to bring them back into the numbers game?
I say that I sympathize, because sometimes the way that math is presented is not very conducive to children and to people who are creative, which is really everybody, I think. And so if it was all about tests and scores and getting the right answer, yes, that can be very off-putting. But math doesn't have to be like that. And there's so much more to it than that. That's what I like to say.
And you've devoted a lot of your work and writing to tapping into that creative and, I guess, even playful side of math. What does that look like to someone who hears the words playful and math and thinks they're in two different worlds?
Well, again, I sympathize, but it's important to remember, I think, that math is not just about numbers and equations, even though that part gets really emphasized in most of school math. So that's school math. And I like to say, maybe you just didn't like school math. And there's so much math that's about just thinking clearly, building structures, finding connections between different situations, bridging gaps between things, and exploration. And all of those things can be much more fun than, what's the answer to this? Now memorize your times tables.
How can we start to practice that in our daily lives?
I have written several books to try and help with that, because, of course, there are so many constraints. The education system is the way it is. The standardized tests are still imposed upon people. But if we can at least be open-minded about it to start with, just like I had some really boring, uncreative dance classes at school, but I still believe that dancing can be creative. It was just that that wasn't. And it's really important to show that to children, because otherwise this cycle keeps going. If parents think that math is boring and off-putting, and then that can get passed on to children. And if we can use the imagination of children to say, oh, look at these shapes, or just to explore things that might be math without being afraid of getting the wrong answer. And I know it's hard, and that's why I'm trying to do a lot of work outside of universities to help with that.
The dreaded question, I think, for every math teacher is, are we going to use this in real life? And I've seen you talk about the idea of kind of a mental or a brain fitness, similar to physical fitness. You know, we may not use that exact exercise in our daily lives, but it's still good for us.
That's absolutely true, especially if you want to be a person who can think well. And I hope that we all want to be able to think well, although sometimes it can appear that some people are not thinking that well at the moment. And math is really like a core exercise, just like we do core exercises to strengthen our bodies, even though there's no activity in life that just involves our core and nothing else. And so I think that math, in its more general form, when it's not just about numbers and equations, can help us do things like understand arguments and especially understand other people's arguments, even when we don't agree with them.
In American society, probably a lot of societies, there's a sense of what kind of people are math people and what kind of people aren't. There might be gender divides, ethnic divides, class divides. How do we make it so that no matter where people are whatever people's backgrounds are, we can all be math people?
Those beliefs can be really hurtful and inhibiting, especially for children and students. The idea that some people are math people and some people aren't is what Carol Dweck would call a fixed mindset. Instead of believing in growth and that we can all change, that the brain can change depending on what we do with it. And sometimes I think that the idea of the weird genius is very attractive, because it kind of relieves us of the responsibility of trying to do any better ourselves. And it's kind of romantic, and it's portrayed in movies and things as this this weird person who we can go, oh, well, they're brilliant at math, but they don't have a social life, so I'm better the way I am. And the idea that you have to be weird like that, or that you you either are or aren't good at math, is very unfortunate. Whereas, in fact, you know, some people may well be better than others at math in the end, but everybody can get better at it. And there is no limit, I think, to how much people can get better, or at least we don't know. There's no kind of single test that we can do, even though the standardized test people may try. There's no single test we can do to decide what your eventual potential is as a mathematician. And so I prefer not to limit anybody and just to help everybody grow.
You've described yourself as a pure mathematician, and you study the mathematics of mathematics. What does that mean?
Good question. I think that pure math is the part that appears to be, it can appear to be the furthest away from real life, because it's very abstract and it's about how structures work without the question of what we can do with them in life. But what I have realized as I go along is that the pure math part is about how to think and how to build sound arguments. And so although the research I do, it doesn't directly help with things like flying a plane or building a bridge, what it does is it gives us ways to practice thinking clearly and building good arguments for how to tell if something is true or not. And that's a big problem in life at the moment, that people go around saying all sorts of things are true. And what we really need is good frameworks for assessing the validity of different points of view. And to me, that's what pure math can help with. Even though it practices it in a very abstract realm, those techniques can be used in all of our daily life as well.
And at the opposite end of the spectrum, you've written columns on everything from the use of math in baking and in music and everyday problem solving. So going from that abstract plane, how can we be mathy in our approach to our daily problems in life?
I think that if you have a phobia or a past trauma from math, then it can cause you to want to run away from any mathematical content in anything. But I try to show that it is all around us, whether you know it's there or not, and that you can get by perfectly well without it. Many people say to me that, you know, they get by perfectly well without doing all this math, and that's true. But I try to show that if you do see the math that's going on, sometimes it can help you do things better without having to rely on and trust other people to do it for you. And I think this is important because there's a lot of people out there who are trying to fool us, be that, dare I say it, the media sometimes, and possibly politicians. People are trying to manipulate us, and having a good grounding in how to work through things ourselves can protect us from being manipulated by unscrupulous people.
Can you leave us with one exercise or thought project that we can start our path back to math?
You know, this will be surprising, but I think that empathy is a form of abstraction that is related to mathematics. I think that math is about analogies between different situations, and that empathy is about analogies between different people. So I would encourage you to find an analogy between you and someone else that helps you understand their point of view, even if it's very, very different from your own, and then to believe, if you can, that that is an aspect of mathematical thinking.
Eugenia, thank you so much for joining us today, and enjoy your trip to Wisconsin.
Thank you very much.
That's Eugenia Cheng. She's scientist in residence at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and author of several math-related books, including The Art of Logic, Using It to Find Clarity for Life's Problems. We talked to her about making math more a part of our daily lives. Eugenia is going to be giving a free public presentation on that book this week in Madison, Thursday evening at 5:30 in the DeLuca Forum of the Discovery Building. We've got a link at wpr.org/centraltime with more info. Coming up, we'll talk to the director of Madison's Chazen Art Museum, which recently expanded its daily schedule to become the most open art museum in the country. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A Wisconsin art museum recently became the holder of an interesting title, the museum with the most weekly operating hours in the country. In an effort to be more accessible to students and working people, the Chazen Museum of Art on the UW-Madison campus recently expanded to 12 hours a day, every day. That makes it, by a lot of standards, the most open art museum in the U.S. Amy Gilman is the director of the Chazen Museum of Art. Amy, thanks a lot for joining us in the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., I don't think of those usually as museum hours. What was the thinking, what was the philosophy that led you to have these hours?
Well, it was a great moment when we really came to a discussion with the staff and then also with many of our visitors and with students about how can we be more accessible to you? What could we do that would, let's say, just break down barriers to you coming here? And one of the things that we kept hearing that I have heard actually my whole career is, well, maybe if you were open when I could come. And I have been involved in many, many discussions over my career about opening, let's say, 2 more hours on an evening or try another day or a little bit expanded hours on a weekend. And instead of doing that, we decided that if we could figure out how to make it work with our partners, that we would just actually just dramatically expand and then see what happens over this first year, which is really our pilot year.
And that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg in some ways in making a museum more approachable and removing barriers, whether that's barriers of time or cultural understanding. What else do you do at Chazen that fits into that philosophy?
Well, it is part of a whole process that we're undergoing here where we're really beginning to think about how do we interact with our visitors. And from my point of view, it really begins with breaking down barriers to people physically coming in the doors. So not everybody is like me or my son who is willing to walk into any museum in the country and thinks that, you know, that it's okay. Not everybody feels that way. So 2 things that we've done in addition to changing the hours. The first is that we have created a new set of staff, the visitor services staff, who are at the front desk specifically to greet you and help orient you and give you directions and give you lots of information about the museum. And the second is we've partnered with the union to open a museum coffee shop in the building. And what I hope is that it will draw more people from the streets, and then I hope to get more of them upstairs.
Yeah, when people think museum, and I think this is probably not true of the museums anymore, but people may still have this idea that museum is a high culture thing. It's for a select crowd. It's not for me.
Yes, I actually believe that one of the best things that we can do is actually meet people where they are. What do you need in order for me to do something that will allow you to come into the museum and feel like you can spend time here? And part of that is not assuming that people have an hour or 2 hours or an afternoon. By being free and being open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, we're saying, come in for 10 minutes. Right. Come in on your coffee break. Come in when you have dropped off the kids to music classes. You know, things like that, where we actually want to encourage you just to come in and spend just a little bit of time in the museum and the galleries. And what I suspect is that you will find things that you love and you will find special places to hang out that you hadn't expected.
Now, this is what's happening at the Chazen, one museum here in Wisconsin. But is this a trend? Is this a thing that's going on in the museum world?
Well, there's a lot of discussion in the museum world about how to be more accessible. This is a pretty radical take on that. And I would argue that actually, I don't know of any standalone museum that could just make this decision and make this happen, because that's a very expensive proposition, which is why doing it at a university art museum, where part of our mission is to experiment and to provide ways for people to access us that I hope will teach us things about how people use museums that then my peers and other kinds of museums will take from that and actually leverage and implement.
And as we wrap up, Amy, what do we see when we start touring the exhibits at the Chazen? What are we going to see that kind of reflects this philosophy?
Well, part of it is that when you walk into the lobby now, you actually see artwork. You see artwork, and you see artwork from the museum's permanent collection, and you can see into our temporary exhibition space, which has an incredible show on right now called Plastic Entanglements, which is contemporary artists utilizing and looking at plastic. And that is a really accessible show, but it also delves into issues of our time in ways that I think will be really engaging to the public.
Amy, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Amy Gilman, director of the Chazen Museum of Art. By the way, that's a WPR underwriter. She talked with us about the museum's new hours, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day, making it the art museum with the most operating hours in the country. Coming up, a look at a new study that finds a big drop in the bird population around North America. We'll find out what's happening here in Wisconsin. First is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Michelle Good is in the studio with me to remind you that your support is the foundation of funding for WPR programs. It's the biggest piece, so make your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Little over 30 minutes to looking for 15 more donations before the top of the hour. Your gift right now, it's so important because when you give, you support the programs that you rely on every day.
Thank you if you've already given. If not, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Think about those two conversations we just heard about math and art, and a mathematician saying, hey, math isn't just for the professionals like me. It can be fun and playful and creative. And then an art museum director here in Wisconsin saying, hold on, you don't have to separate yourself from the art world. The museum can be a welcoming place for you. We can bring you into the art world. Two great examples of conversations where we take pieces of our culture, our society, and bring them straight to you. That's their missions are kind of our missions here at Wisconsin Public Radio, too. If you support these kind of conversations, make a gift in support of them at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we ask you to do that because WPR is listener supported. That means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, it makes these types of topics, it makes them possible every single day. So please choose an amount that works for you and then make that gift now.
You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Pledge $10 a month or more and get a WPR tote bag, yours when you ask for it, and give $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
12 more donations before the top of the hour. Don't forget that when you make that donation, you are automatically entered in a drawing for free Hamilton tickets, a pair of Hamilton tickets, dinner, and a night in Chicago. That's all possible when you make that donation. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on Central Time and the Ideas Network for great conversations. We count on you to help pay for it. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new study finds that the bird population of North America declined by 30% over the last 50 years. We'll talk to a conservation biologist about the study and what it could mean for Wisconsin's birds. First, Michelle Good joins me in the studio for the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Your gift right now is so important because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for all of our programs here on the Ideas Network. You keep Central Time and all the shows you enjoy going strong. Invest in your future listening right now with a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When 12 more people join in during the next 25 minutes or so, we will meet our goal. And these hourly goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs that you enjoy. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Central Time, you get a wide variety of conversations, the top news stories of the day. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be looking at the latest moves toward impeachment of the president. But also interesting topics like the one we're about to have about threats to birds around the United States and here in Wisconsin, plus lively conversations about science, the joy of math, and more. Central Time is your go-to place for an informative and interesting afternoon.
And your financial support is a big part of what makes this possible. Because listener support is the biggest piece of our funding here at WPR. So make a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to spend a dollar a day on just about anything that's part of your daily routine, the coffee, the snack from the vending machine.
And consider the news, information, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a dollar a day, $30. $5 a month is just the right amount of a donation for you. So sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs that you enjoy every day.
This member drive, ask for the new WPR tote bag. The sturdy USA-made natural cotton bag features a warm yellow and orange geometric design. It's the perfect bag for all your essentials. What will you carry in your WPR tote bag?
I'm going to put all my kale in it, all my tomatoes.
Groceries.
Late glass and pretty rocks.
Ask for your WPR tote bag with your gift of $10 a month or more. Here's how.
You can make that gift online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make that donation and pick up that tote bag. Rob Ferret here with Michelle Good. Your support during this fall membership drive makes all the WPR programs you rely on possible. Your gift of maybe $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference.
And it is super fast and easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay for it.
Takes just a few minutes to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Those few minutes will fund your future daily listening. Your support right now really does make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And after you've made your donation to WPR, you can make your gift go even farther by telling your friends and family about it.
Get on social media, give them a call, mention it when you see them. Let your friends and family know that you support WPR and plant that idea in their minds that, hey, they listen too, I hope. Maybe they could give too. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and then let your friends know how good it feels when you support the station you enjoy every day.
It is the best kind of peer pressure possible. Yeah. 12 more donations in the next 20 minutes or so. We can do that, but you have to join in. You make WPR possible, but you only make it possible when you give. So please do it now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Layton in Maple says, I'm upgrading my donation today to show my gratitude for afternoon programming on WPR. I count on Central Time to plug me into the day's leading topics. Layton, thank you so much for your ongoing support. Thanks for boosting it and for the kind words. How about you? Make your gift now. And like Layton, you'll be entered into the drawing for a pair of tickets to see Hamilton down Chicago way. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make your donation, please consider becoming a sustainer. You can become one. It's super fast. It's easy. Easy to set up monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And as an added bonus, you are entered in every single drawing we have automatically.
It takes just a few minutes to give, whether you become a sustainer or not. We just need your name, some basic info about you, how we contact you, how much you want to give, and how you want to pay for it. That's it. That's the whole spiel. It takes just a few minutes online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. Do it now. Get it done. You'll be glad you did. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Tomorrow on Central Time, in our weekly look at the latest news in national politics, we'll get to the latest in the ongoing impeachment story. But first, now. You're hearing the song of the wood thrush. It's a migratory bird that makes it home throughout North America, and many of those birds breed here in Wisconsin. However, wood thrushes, along with many species of birds, including the Baltimore Oriole and the bobolink, are experiencing significant population loss. That's according to a multi-decade study published last week that found that North America lost roughly 3 billion birds in a 50-year period. Our next guest joins us to talk about the study and what can be done to turn things around. Ryan Brady is a conservation biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, this big North America scale study, what did it find? Flesh it out for us a little bit.
Well, it was a big study over long term. It was done by 7 institutions that are very highly respected in the bird science and conservation world: Cornell Lab of Ornithology, American Bird Conservancy, Smithsonian Bird Center, and others. And what they did was they analyzed data from several long-term surveys since dating back to about 1970, so almost 50 years. Things like a breeding bird survey, the Christmas bird counts that some people may have heard of, some shorebird surveys that have been going on in that time, as well as radar returns. You can actually see birds on radar, so looking at the intensity of those returns over time. And so they ended up with 48 years of data for over 500 species of birds across continental North America. And from that, they were able to determine what species, what bird groups were doing well, which ones weren't doing well, and then report through this study on those trends.
And big picture, the overall number of birds seems to be down a lot, right?
A lot would be an understatement. Yeah, it's huge. 2.9 billion fewer breeding birds in North America today than there were in 1970. So that's about a net loss of about 30% of our breeding birds in that time.
Are we seeing similar trends here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, in general, the trends that we're finding here in Wisconsin mimic what was reported in the study. So, for example, large numbers of grassland birds have declined nationally, continentally, and that is reflected here in Wisconsin as well. We're seeing aerial insectivores, so birds that eat insects on the wing, like nighthawks and swallows and flycatchers. We're seeing those declines here as well. Shorebirds. Water birds like herons and terns. And then on the flip side, some of the birds that are increasing on a broader scale, we're also seeing that reflected here. So things like many birds of prey, woodpeckers, waterfowl, and so forth. If there's any exception that I might draw attention to for discrepancy, we may be doing somewhat better on many of our forest bird species than were reported in the study. Many declines are especially harsh in the eastern United States. And here in Wisconsin, while we're not out of the woods in any sense, the declines are somewhat less steep in some species. For example, maybe wood thrushes, Baltimore orioles, and some of those.
Are we seeing any of those species that are in decline going into, say, a threatened status where they weren't 10, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, there's definitely been declines to the point of causing them to be, now listed. There's really grave concerns. Some of them maybe were once common enough, and there's still enough of them on the landscape they haven't been listed quite yet, but we may be headed in that direction. So there's certainly some concern that if we don't right the ship, that we're going to see more birds listed as endangered or threatened, and that's going to cause much more investment to be needed in order to stem and reverse those declines.
I want to get into some of the causes of this and conservation efforts in a bit. But before we go there, this is about more than just birds, right? If we're losing numbers of birds, it seems like that's got to have consequences for the ecosystems they live in.
Yes. I mean, we're kind of in a biodiversity crisis here. You've heard about dramatic declines in insect populations or similar stories in amphibians to some extent with fish and bats. And now we have birds that are clearly among them. They're a key part in the food web and the food chain. They're great indicators of environmental health. They have a lot of ecological value as pollinators and seed dispersers and pest control. And there's great economic value. Aside from those services they provide, they're also big business. Billions and tens of billions of dollars are spent each year to either on equipment or bird seed or traveling to see birds. And then obviously they're extremely important from an emotional perspective. They're colorful. They have these great songs. They can fly. We can't. And they're everywhere around us. So we're constantly reminded of how beautiful they are. And study after study is coming out to show the kind of uplifting effects that birdwatching has on the people that partake in that activity. So there's just a tremendous amount of value to be lost if we don't do something about it soon.
Talking to Ryan Brady, conservation biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, looking at a continent-wide study of birds, big declines in the number of birds in the U.S. and its neighbors, and we're seeing similar trends here in Wisconsin. Well, let's dig into some of the causes. Ryan, the report mentions habitat loss as a big part of the story. Can you talk about that?
It's got to be the number one loss is number one cause is habitat loss, and a lot of that has to do with more people on the landscape. We have higher needs. We've intensified our agricultural practices. We've urbanized many more areas. Rural development. we need more resources, so there's more extraction activities that are all causing losses to habitat. Not only here in the nesting grounds, but also on wintering grounds for many species, which is Central and South America. Habitat degradation is similarly problematic. We are chopping up the landscape, so it's a lower quality. There's a lot of invasive species that are increasingly becoming problematic, reduced water quality, and so forth. So habitat is definitely that number one driver. With that said, there's some distinct human-caused threats that number in the billions of birds per year. And, for example, outdoor cats, a recent study came out in 2015 demonstrating that over 2 billion birds per year in the U.S. alone are killed by outdoor cats. Window collisions are a major problem, over 600 million deaths per year in the U.S. alone to birds. Vehicle collisions, over 200 million deaths a year. Industrial collisions, so things like power lines, communication towers, wind turbines, over 60 million a year. Then there's those things you can't measure, like pesticides, which are increasingly becoming problematic again, it seems. Some listeners may have seen a recent study that showed a neonicotinoid pesticide caused weight loss and delayed migration in a certain type of sparrow, which would have obvious effects on its ability to survive and ultimately produce young. And then, obviously, capping it all off, it's compounded by the potential effects of climate change, altering habitats, shifting bird migration routes and timing, threatening plant communities, and so forth. So it's a lot of stuff to digest, and we're going to have to pick pieces off one at a time, both at a lower level, like at home, as individuals, as well as a higher level through our political leaders.
It seems like there's a little bit of good news in the report. And here in Wisconsin, you mentioned some species that have made comebacks, bald eagles. We see sandhill cranes nowadays and others. The good news, I guess, if there is some in this report, is that the conservation efforts, if we're intentional about it, it sounds like they can pay off.
That's right. Time and again, we've seen that if we invest in conservation, it pays dividends, and we see wildlife recover. So raptors are a great example. We banned DDT, we passed endangered species laws, and so we ended up seeing a real boom or real recovery of bald eagles, peregrine falcons, ospreys, merlins, which is a small falcon, and so forth. And another model, which is a fantastic model, we've seen in this report that waterfowl numbers are up about 56% since 1970, and that in large part has to do with a big investment of dollars into wetland protection and restoration. And so some of that's coming from a government level, a higher level, things like the Migratory Bird Stamp and North American Wetlands Conservation Act, all the way down to nonprofit or individual groups and donors, conservationists like Ducks Unlimited, all raising those funds that go into putting wetlands back on a landscape and increasing waterfowl numbers.
Looking at some of the causes now, and you said it's kind of a matter of picking apart and tackling the different issues one at a time. What kind of things could be done for the grassland species, say, that took big losses according to the report? What can be done when it comes to habitat restoration for them?
Well, we need to, for example, in grassland birds, minimize our activities that would intensify any level of agriculture. We need to have places for these grassland birds that are not cornfields, that are not soybean fields. We need to set aside places that can be idle pasture, or it can be warm season grasses, that can be prairies, somewhat reminiscent of what was here in certain parts of the state historically. At a backyard level, it would be more difficult to impact a group like grassland birds, but we can have many, many positive impacts on a lot of other grassland birds. With that said, you could help species during migration by, say, keeping your cat indoors or avoiding the use of pesticides, introducing some smaller scale prairies on your property that would be beneficial to both grassland birds as well as pollinators, and similar examples.
What about the windows? You said that put a real dent into the national bird population. Are there ways we can build better to protect birds?
Yes, windows are a huge problem. Obviously, it occurs at different scales. There's windows on corporate buildings and in urban settings, and in that case, We need to be integrating ways into the manufacturing of the glass, for example, by incorporating UV signals or having fritted glass, things that don't obstruct view, that will really help reduce those bird collisions. There's many lights out programs, so if there's lights left on in these settings at night, that tends to attract migratory birds. As they're migrating, they get disoriented and they hit the windows. So there's a variety of lights out programs that can help. On an individual level, we can do some of those same things, but people need to take action to reduce the reflectivity of their glass. So one single decal on your window is not going to do it, even if it is a silhouette of a hawk. What you need to think of is the 2x4 rule, 2 inches by 4 inches, and space either ribbons or some sort of tape, some sort of visible obstruction at a 2x4 inch level that will keep birds from hitting those windows.
Ryan, do you see this big new report out showing the loss of billions of birds in North America as a wake-up call that people are paying attention to?
I sure hope so, and I think it will. I think at an individual level, so many people love birds. We're fortunate, especially here in Wisconsin. The most recent numbers released showed that roughly 1 in 3 Wisconsinites considers themselves bird watchers at some level. And I think that's really good news for birds because there's a lot of people out there who care and can take action. We can have impacts at a local level. That makes a big difference. If we can't really help birds in our own backyards, then it would be a little more difficult. But we can. There's so many things we can do. We can reduce our lawn. We can plant native species. We can remove our invasive species. We can avoid the pesticides, make our windows safer, keeps our cats indoors, and so forth. We can make donations to causes that really help. We're so fortunate here in Wisconsin to have the Bird Protection Fund managed by the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. That's a way you can directly give back to some of these birds. So I think there's a real opportunity here. This will be a wake-up call. I think it will trickle up to our political leaders. There will be pressure applied, and I think we're going to see some exciting action continue. And we already have some of that here in Wisconsin, which is exciting to be a part of here through the Department of Natural Resources, as well as through the partnership I work for known as the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative.
Ryan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Ryan Brady is a conservation biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He joined us to talk about a recent study that found that North America lost roughly 30% of its bird population over the last 50 years and what that means here in Wisconsin. Right now, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Michelle Good is in the studio with me. Your support is a big part of the funding for all the programs you enjoy on the Ideas Network. And it's your time now to take action during this drive. You make it all possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You still have about 12 minutes to make your donation count towards Central Time. We are looking for 9 more donations, 9 more people to join in and become part of the team. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every single day.
In this last conversation, we heard about this big North America-wide study, but then we narrowed the scope and found out how it's all working here in Wisconsin and got some practical advice for helping birds as populations decline. It's an example of the way we take big issues and get a Wisconsin-centered perspective on them.
And because WPR is listener-supported, that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, it makes this show possible and all the topics that we discuss, the ones you tune in for every single day. So choose an amount that works for you and make that gift. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And pledge $10 a month or more and ask for your next piece of WPR gear, the new WPR tote. This natural cotton tote has a stylish geometric design. It's perfect for groceries, among other things. Support the programs you value and show off your Wisconsin Public Radio pride wherever you go. Give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
$10 a month will get you that beautiful tote. Take it to the farmer's market, your books to the library, stuff to work. You will love it. $10 a month, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's a special bonus gift, but the main reason is you pledge because you support great conversations here in Wisconsin. Looking for 8 more pledges now in the next few minutes. You can keep pledging on into the news break to get it counted toward this hour of Central Time. We count on you to help pay for all these great conversations on Central Time all the way across the weekday schedule here on the Ideas Network all weekend too. Make your very important gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And your donation is not just helping your listening. It's support for people who might not be able to pledge. It makes it available for everyone throughout the entire state. It's a chance for you to give back for to your community. Make that donation right now, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
You can support great radio. If you pledge $10 a month or more, you can grab that tote bag, and you're automatically entered when you give into a drawing for a pair of Hamilton tickets in Chicago, a night out, a night stay, a meal. Hamilton, give now. A lot of great reasons. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.